Tonight's scripture is Leviticus 20:7-8. Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am the Lord your God, and you shall keep my statutes and perform them. I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Please be seated.
Good evening. As we continue our walking through the Bible, see if the guys can pull that up for me back in the back. I thought that I had it opened up, but it's all right. They'll catch up with me, I'm sure. So, there are some handouts in the back, so if you're following along, want something to take notes on, there's some of those sheets out there. There's some for the kids, some for the adults. And so, pick appropriately, I guess I should say. Leviticus. Leviticus is one of those books that if you're reading through the Bible, you get to Leviticus, you've done pretty well, maybe in those first couple of chapters, and then you're bogged down in the offerings and the sacrifices, and it can get somewhat difficult sometimes to continue on. But if you press through, it opens up a world of knowledge and background information when it comes to New Testament worship. And so you might say, okay, but yeah, But Old Testament worship under the law of Moses, it had the priesthood and there was the annual sacrifice by the high priest, and he would sprinkle the blood on certain things, and there'd be a sacrificial goat, and there would be a scapegoat, and there would be all of these things, and so you have the burnt offering and so forth, and then once a year the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies and sprinkle the blood upon the mercy seat and so forth, having the incense burning, and as the curtain is pulled back to go in there, and those things representing New Testament worship, however. And so we spent some time a while back looking at types and shadows and anti-types and types, and in so doing, we talked about the Old Testament worship and some of those types and shadows when it comes to the New Testament worship. And so I hope that you will remember that. If not, that is something that you can go online and go back and study that lesson, and you can check that out. The book of Leviticus. As we study and are walking through the book, we have looked at Genesis and Exodus already and really had an overview of the Old Testament and things like that. So, but Genesis, if you will remember, deals with man's ruin. It deals with the problem of sin. Man fell. Genesis chapter 3. He was given of any of these trees in the garden, you may freely eat, except the tree that is in the midst of the garden. Of it you shall not. The day that you eat thereof, you shall surely die. And they were tempted as such, and did eat, and then were banished from the garden. And so we see then Genesis dealing with man's sin. Exodus deals with the picture of man's redemption. He was lifted up. He was in Egypt in bondage for years and years, crying out unto God, and God sent a deliverer. He sent Moses to deliver the children of Israel out of Egyptian bondage. While Leviticus deals with man's religion, that's not all it deals with, but that's certainly a large portion of what it deals with at that point. So it has been said that in one night God took Israel out of Egypt, but it took 40 years to get Egypt out of Israel. Think about that. You think about what Israel had gone through in all those years, all the things that they saw. That's what they came out with in their mind, how to be pleasing unto God. And so, in so doing, they had the Egyptian picture of worship and all of their gods in their minds. And yet now Jehovah God has brought them out of the land of Egypt, and he has laid down for them these laws. This is how you're going to live according to my word. And if you will do this, you will be sons and daughters unto me, and I will be a father to you. And so there is this agreement that God makes with them. In Leviticus, it literally means pertaining to the Levites. The Jewish rabbis called it the law of the priest, or the law of the offerings, which still pertain to the Levites, obviously, making those offerings. Leviticus is, I think, the very heart of the Pentateuch. We're talking about those first five books because it deals literally with the heart of man and his relationship with God, how he is able to approach God. And so Leviticus served as a handbook for the Levitical priesthood, giving divine instructions, giving regulations for the cleansing of the priests and the people, and for their worship and service unto God. And so that's why I was saying it's more than just worship, though that is a huge portion of that. But you have to realize that all of that law is also tied up in the religious part of that, and there's the civil part of their law. And you can't really separate those things in the books of Moses. Alfred Edersheim wrote, "The book of Leviticus derives its designation from the corresponding Greek term in the Septuagint, or the LXX translation, and its Latin name in the Vulgate. But among the Jews, it was commonly known as the Lord called." And so directly from the Hebrew text, "Now the Lord called to Moses." And so, which is very typical with the Hebrew Bible, and how the Hebrews would have referred to their Bible and how they named it and made reference to it as such. And so that's how they would have known it, the Lord called. And so that's kind of interesting. It might be hard for us to put together a kid's song, right, to do the books of the Bible if we put together all the Hebrew names and what they referred to it as. That might be interesting. If somebody wants to take that on, I'll let you. And I'll let you lead it for the kids too, because I'm sure it'll be difficult. All right, so this book that pertains to the Levites, let's answer our questions. Who wrote it? We have shown very clearly that Moses is the author. Ultimately, God is the true author of these books. But he used Moses to write Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And so no big secret reveal here. This is the same thing that we've been talking about with these other books. And so the Pentateuch, again, the first five books are the books of law, the Torah, as the Hebrews would have referred to it. These are all written by Moses and referred to. Without fail, every scholar has basically, every conservative scholar, I'll say, at least, has given credence to the fact that Moses wrote all of these books. Moses literally means drawn from the water. Leviticus 27, 34, Nehemiah 1, 8. We're going to look at those verses here in just a moment. There's no other book in the Bible that contains more direct messages from God. 56 times in 27 chapters, you'll find the phrase, "the Lord spoke," or "the Lord said," or "the Lord commanded." And so this is very clear. This is from God. He is ultimately the author of these books. And so Moses was inspired of God to write these things. It's interesting, at least from my perspective in studying this, one of the things that stands out when you look at the books of Moses, and you start looking at how they are put together, you'll see some phrases that stand out. And you're going to see several of those tonight, especially from Leviticus, and we'll try to cover as many of those as we can. But from Leviticus 27, verse 34, "These are the commandments that the Lord commanded Moses for the people of Israel on Mount Sinai." And so again, this leads credence to the fact that Moses is here the author. From Nehemiah 1, "Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. And so this was in the rebuilding period after Israel has split into a divided kingdom, the northern kingdom taken off into Assyrian captivity and basically scattered among several different nations. They were never again faithful unto God. And then you have the southern kingdom, or the kingdom of Judah. And the southern kingdom, for a time, certainly of their 19 or 20 kings, you had not quite half of them that were faithful unto God. And you'll find that phrase that they served God after, as their father David had done so. And you see that continued lineage through the lineage of David. After they go into Babylonian captivity, eventually they get to come back. And Jerusalem is rebuilt. The temple is rebuilt. Worship is restored. All of those things. Nehemiah comes on the scene. This is after Jerusalem has somewhat been rebuilt. And again, the temple has been rebuilt and worship has been restored. But the walls are still rubble around the city. And so there was no protection whatsoever. Nehemiah comes on the scene to help remedy that very fact. And he says before the people, I pray that the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. And so he is, reminding the people of God, if you're going to be faithful unto God, God is going to keep his word to you. But if you are unfaithful, you will in fact be scattered among the nations. That's what has just previously happened. And so there is that reminder. But you have the reference to Moses and God directing Moses to write those things. When was it written? You have, we've talked about this as well. And so some of this will kind of be over each of these books. But it's written during the last 40-year period of Moses' life. This is during the wilderness wandering. And so as they are spending that time in the wilderness because they would not go ahead and go into the land that God had promised them, God said, I will make you wander a year for each of the days that your spies sent, or your spies were in the land of Canaan. And so they would wander for those 40 years, or for the remainder of those 40 years. And so you have the events actually of Leviticus, though, basically cover 1 month. And so it's the giving of this law that pertained to the Levites. And we see in this, written approximately 1450 BC, and we spent some time looking at that and kind of counting backwards. This is the time of Solomon's reign back in 974 to 934. And you have 1 Kings 6, verse 1. It came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, he began to build the house of the Lord. So it gives us a time frame that we're able to walk backwards and look at those things. And it puts us back to around 1450 to 1420 B.C. And hence the 1450 approximately given in the date. I try to be careful concerning those dates. Some of them we know very specifically. Some of them are more approximated due to some of the evidence that we have. So to whom was it written? We've looked at Deuteronomy chapter 5. Moses very clearly says this is not written to our father, or not an agreement with God, with our fathers, but this is to us who are alive this day and our children. And so this was written to Israel, according to Deuteronomy 5, verses 1 to 3. Particularly, Leviticus seems to obviously have that emphasis with the Levitical priesthood. And so we see this has that purpose in mind, that it was written to the Levitical priesthood. But this was something that all of Israel needed to know. This was how the worship was going to be arranged and ordered and patterned. And so you find that this, again, is that handbook for the priesthood, how to worship, how to use the tabernacle, who could serve in the priesthood, all the religious practices, special occasions that they would have, and so all of those different feasts and meals that they would have, different offerings that they would have, All of those things are laid out in the book of Leviticus. They had just erected the tabernacle and needed to know how to use it. And so hence we have the book of Leviticus. And so at the close of Exodus, you can go back and look. The tabernacle was being finished up and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Exodus chapter 40 and verse 34. And so this is at the beginning of Leviticus. Here's God speaking from the tabernacle, delivering the Levitical code or the Levitical law. So why was it written? Very easily, it sequels Exodus, just as we just mentioned. You go from one scene to the very next, and so it just picks up on that. But it has a special purpose in mind, and that is instructions on how to be holy before a holy God. And so that seems to be the purpose. Let's get to some of our keys. Keys to understanding. You have key verses, key words, a key phrase, and I'm going to add this week a key thought. And so I wanted to put all those up there so that you can, if you're taking notes, you'll have those in front of you. Let's begin thinking first about a key thought. This idea of fellowship. Before, God had spoken from a distance. He had spoken to them, particularly He had spoken to Moses in the mount, at Mount Sinai. But now God is among His chosen people, and God has taken steps to restore man's fellowship with Him. Remember, we look at the book of Exodus as a book of redemption, and so or a book of deliverance. And so now that fellowship between God and His people, and of course, there's going to be, as God would have them move to yet another location, He would indicate that by no longer having His cloud over the tabernacle, but rather beginning to move as such, and they would follow. We have some key verses. Actually, before I get to the key verses, I'm going to get some key words and key phrases here. Because these stand out to me. There's a couple things. You have the word holy 87 times in the book. And that pictured versus sin and uncleanness 194 times. And so sin or uncleanness, any of the derivatives of those words, 194 times. So you can see a picture of a holy God saying, "This is how I want you to be. I want you to be holy and sanctified, set apart for worship and service unto me, and stay away from the practice of sin and uncleanness and all of those things." And you have to understand too, this is something that again they had seen in their lifetime, being in Egypt all of that time. I would say also you find the phrase, "The Lord spoke," or "The Lord spake," 56 times. And so that seems to be, that certainly stands out. There's some other words and phrases. The word "blood," as it pertains to a cleansing, is used 89 times. The word "atonement," or "at one," if you think about it that way, "at one with God," is used at least 45 times that I could find. You find the phrase, "I am the Lord your God," 21 times. And so there are several keys. And to me, that helps us in unlocking what the book is really about. Because again, it's a book that is sometimes difficult to just sit and read through. But if you have an idea of some of those things as you're looking through that, as you are reading through and you read "the Lord spoke" and you underline it, it's going to stand out to you. Or you see the word "I am the Lord your God." And that's why I say again, the key thought has to do with that fellowship that now God has with His people. There are some helps, things that I think are helpful in reading through and studying the book. Don't read it as a history book. Remember, it was a handbook. And so you kind of have to think of it like that. Some of you probably have had maybe even a Bible handbook. And it's not something that you typically just sit down and read, but you'll find a heading, and it pertains to something that you're looking for to give you some information about maybe a particular book like this. There's Halley's Bible Handbook, there's Unger's Bible Handbook, there's Smith's Bible Handbook, there's any number of handbooks. I did mention one last week, and I couldn't remember the name of it, but it's by Frank Dunn. It's Know Your Bible. This is a brother who wrote this material. It's an analysis of every book in the Bible. It's a pricey book for what it, maybe not for what it is, but it's, I think it's normally around $25. But if you don't have this book, it's one that you need in your library. It is essential, and a lot of this information that I've gained through the years, a lot of it has come right out of this, as well as other sources, and so I try to pull all that together to share with you. But again, don't just read it as a history book. It contains, obviously, a historic moment where God is dealing with His people and giving them that law, but at the same time, if you study it more as a handbook, and you can look at it that way, you'll find that it's helpful, and it unlocks doors again when it comes to New Testament worship, and especially the book of Hebrews. If you're going to study the book of Hebrews, you're going to spend time right here in the book of Leviticus. Hopefully that will be helpful a little bit. Again, it's the background even for New Testament worship. These key verses that I noted a moment ago, let's go through a couple of those. Leviticus 11, 44 through 45. For I am the Lord your God, consecrate yourselves therefore, be holy, for I am holy. This is God's call to them. This was also a warning to them. You shall not defile yourselves with any swarming thing that crawls on the ground, for I am the Lord who brought you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. Leviticus 17 and verse 11. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that makes atonement for the soul. And so we have that picture of the atoning blood. This was first done by animal sacrifices, but what we find out in the book of Hebrews is that it would never fully take away the sins of mankind. There had to be blood shed, for the life of the flesh is in the blood, he says. But we find out from Hebrews that there had to be a better sacrifice than just animal sacrifices. And of course, that would be Jesus, and we'll look at that passage in just a moment. Leviticus 19, verse 2, speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel. Say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Now, when you read a phrase like that, I am the Lord your God, and I am holy. And when that phrase keeps coming up over and over and over again, whether it be the 21 times I am the Lord your God, or the Lord spoke in that fashion, and so many times it had a warning attached to it as well as a promise attached to it. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, Lord your God, am holy. We'll read another one in chapter 20. Consecrate yourselves therefore, be holy, for I am the Lord your God, and you shall keep my statutes and perform them. I am the Lord who sanctifies you, or sets you apart, literally, from the rest of the world. And so we see these as our key verses, and certainly there's probably others that we could pick up on. Let's just notice kind of an outline of the whole book. You have the first 10 chapters deal with how to approach God, how to come to God. And so you have those sacrifices that are listed there, the offerings that are listed, the burnt offerings, meal offerings, peace offerings, sin offerings, trespass offerings, law, the laws regarding all of those offerings, and then that it was going to be done through the priesthood, chapters 8 through 10. So this is how they were told that they could approach a holy God. Now, how then to stay with God? How to be separate from the rest of the world is the rest of the book. And so not only then do you have the idea of sacrifice in the first 10 chapters, but even separation in the last half of the book. You have chapters 11 through 27, really more than half of the book. Be pure in body, and be pure in your soul. And so those are things that stand out to me. Sometimes when people are being critical of the Bible, or maybe critical of us, and maybe how we teach the Bible, some might say, well, you don't believe in the Old Testament at all, and you don't believe in those things. But what the Old Testament does for us, and I believe particularly the book of Leviticus, it sets up for us how we commune with God, how we fellowship with God, and how we're able to worship God, and how we serve God every day of our life. That is seen throughout the book of Leviticus. And so it's folly to say that we don't believe in the Old Testament. We know that we're not under the Old Testament by way of authority, but we learn great lessons from it. Romans 15 and verse 4, 1 Corinthians 10 verses 1 through 4 as well make that point very clear. Always like to end thinking about Christ and how we see Christ in the book of Leviticus. He is our high priest. Let's go to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 4. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession, for we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. He was our perfect high priest. But we talk about and study in the book of Leviticus, you spend a great deal of time talking about the Levitical priesthood, but also you study the order of Aaron, that of the high priest, and that family line that would be serving as high priest. And you learn a great deal about what the high priest would do as his part of the worship service and his part of the atonement process, if you will. And then we come to Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews 9. Excuse me. Hebrews 9. Let's begin reading in verse 18 down to the end of the chapter. Whereupon neither the first testament was dedicated without blood. For when Moses had spoken every precept to all the people according to the law, he took the blood of the calves and of goats with water and scarlet wool and hyssop and sprinkled both the book and all the people, saying, "This is the blood of the testament which God hath enjoined unto you." So this is a picture of that old law and that old process done by the high priest. Moreover, he sprinkled with blood both the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry. And almost all things are by the law purged with blood. And without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. It was necessary. And this is where you begin to see the shift or the point that is made by the Hebrews writer. It was therefore necessary that the pattern of the things in the heavens should be purified with these. So there's a pattern. There were those things that were typifying something that was yet in heaven. But the heavenly things themselves have to have better sacrifices than these, he says. For Christ has not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are the figures of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us, nor yet that he should offer himself often, as the high priest enters into the holy place every year with the blood of others. And so this comparison is made between the old law and what the priesthood and what the high priest would do under the old law, entering in once every year with the blood of calves and goats, and to do so with their sacrifices, then to enter into the Holy of Holies and to sprinkle the blood on the mercy seat and so forth. But he says, for then must he often have suffered since the foundation of the world. So Christ didn't have to do that. But the Old Testament high priest did. But now once in the end of the world hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Not only is Christ our high priest, but he is the sacrifice of the high priest. And as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this the judgment, so Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. The book of Leviticus opens up for us a world of understanding of our New Testaments, and maybe in particularly the book of Hebrews, because there's so much compared to that old law. But I would say that it opens up for us, hopefully, as you study the book of Hebrews, it will open up for you, as well as it has for me, an understanding of how we approach God, with what kind of attitude, with what kind of sacrifices. It's the fruit of our lips. It is always and has been always one that is from the heart. He is always one of the heart of his people. And the book of Leviticus, I think, is the heart of the books of Moses. And it shows why. Because this is how you're going to approach a holy God. You will be a holy people. Now, he can make you holy. And he has already given that sacrifice that we just looked at for Jesus Christ. He has made all of that possible so that we can be a holy people, sanctified, set apart unto God's holy service. The Apostle Peter speaks a great deal about that, and he calls us a royal priesthood. A royal priesthood. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. So I hope that will help you in your studies, the book of Leviticus. Hope it is helpful in the sense that it draws your attention and your mind to being a holy people. If there's a way that we can help and assist you this evening, if you have a need, we'd pray for you. We'd love to pray for you. We'd love to help any way that we may know how and have the ability to do so. But there may be one who realizes what Jesus has done for them, that wonderful sacrifice, that gift from the Father of His only begotten Son. Have you responded properly to that gift by obeying the gospel? You can do that this very evening. We would assist you with it. If we can help, come to the front while we stand, while we sing.